Good afternoon. Welcome to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Leah Drost.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
And we are here to entertain you. Well, that was a new one. I didn't say, hey, thanks for tuning in. We got a great show. But we do. We will have an amazing show for you. My old friend Whitney Scala is back. We're going to talk real estate and real estate law, and nobody can make real estate law as interesting as Whitney. I got to tell you. Guy's got a great brain for real estate and the law, and he makes it so fascinating. You're just going to be all a shiver with his information in just a second.
A shiver,
yes.
You're really dating yourself with that word.
I'm all a shiver. Well, before we get to I've been working on this idea, right? I want a jingle to our phone number.
Right.
And Leah?
That's where Leah comes in.
You're working on that jingle, aren't we, Leah?
It's in the process. I just started mapping it out. It's officially done.
So you know what the number is, right? 303.
303.
814.
814. 8184.
8184. Yeah, and you're doing it because you are a singer.
I am. I'm in a band called Taking on Towers. We're actually playing at the Hard Rock Hotel.
Get a shameless promo in.
What?
Get a shameless promotion.
There was nothing shameless about that.
Yeah.
I like that.
So where are you playing?
Hard Rock Hotel in San Diego. So we don't know the exact time yet, but we're going to be finding out the day before.
Sometime before 2 a.m.?
Yeah, seems about right. Yep.
Can we get backstage passes?
What?
Do we get backstage passes?
Of course. Yeah.
And we get to meet the singer?
They're all set for all of you guys.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
All right. So you're going to have a jingle for us soon.
Soon.
Ready,
yeah.
Let's
Maybe
practice.
Not. I don't know.
You should debut the jingle on stage at the Hard Rock.
That's it. We'll be there.
Yeah.
See if anybody calls it.
What?
You see if anybody calls it. 303.
303.
814.
814.
8184.
8184.
And nobody has any idea why we're telling them that number, right?
No, they're going to have to find out maybe tomorrow, this week. So.
Oh, wow. How cool.
Yeah.
So when are you going to be at the Hard Rock again?
This Friday. It can be anywhere between 8 p.m. to 2 a.m.
8 p.m. One drink or 10 drinks in, you're going to be there somewhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. You might as well come for the whole thing. There's going to be other bands performing as well, so not just Taking on Towers. And you can also find us on Facebook.
There she goes.
Oh, shameless plug.
I'm working that in, you know? Got us, you know, check out our music. It's really good. So,
will you still talk to us someday when Leah's like a big name? When everybody just calls you Leah like Madonna, you know, you don't even have a last
plot
name.
Plot twist, you're interviewing me.
Yes.
You're taking on time.
Don't forget us when you're big and famous.
There we go.
Yeah.
Leah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Work on that. Whitney Scala is with us. I don't know how you're going to follow that, Whitney.
I'm not nearly as interesting as Leah. If it gets a little slow with me, we'll just get back to Leah.
Back,
yeah.
Right?
She's fascinating.
You are an attorney.
Yeah.
Since 1983.
I practice real estate and business law. I form a lot of entities, and there's a lot of overlap in those areas. So, for example, I help people with major office leases. I help people with buying and selling real estate. I help people with forming the entities that'll hold that real estate. And then I help people run their businesses. And right now, in fact, the largest deal on my desk happens to be what we call a private placement, where I'm helping an exciting company that's trying to grow, helping them accept a $5 million investment. And that's been pretty fun.
Wow. Now, you're making that investment yourself or somebody else doing it?
Yeah, I just put it on my credit card.
How do you help a company accept money? I would just say
it's complicated. It's more complicated than you think because those investors have a number of preconditions to
Wait
their
a minute,
investments.
If they didn't want to get paid back, it'd be a lot easier, wouldn't it?
Well, it's not a loan. What they want to do is grow that company and everybody make
money. But they want something back on it.
They hope for the growth that this company certainly has the capability of doing. So.
And here's the interesting thing. Everything that you said sounds really boring until something goes wrong. And then it's not so boring anymore when you set it up right.
You know what? I would tell you.
You find it interesting even if things don't go wrong?
I would tell you you've got it all wrong.
Uh-oh.
I love what I do. It's amazing the place that attorneys sometimes have with people on a personal level. Every transaction I work on, there's something in motion, both professionally in the office and personally in my in the person who's my direct contact. That person, and that's primarily because I represent small and mid-sized companies, so that the folks I'm talking to are usually the founders. But those people, when they come to me, they are looking either to take their dream to the next level, and they've got some hurdles. They're in some sort of transition upward, or during the tougher times, and this is really difficult to be a part of, but they're in transition downward. And as a lawyer, if you're a good listener, if you're somebody who has pretty decent people skills, a lot of times those clients will turn to you and start talking to you about the personal stuff as well as the professional stuff. They're looking for somebody who's a little outside their normal circle, somebody other than a friend or someone they go to church with or somebody they see on a number of different levels. And they're sharing, and they know you have the capacity to help solve problems, and they're sharing things with you. And that's a very special place to be with people.
You make it sound like it's almost a spiritual journey for you.
It is.
It's not boring at all.
I absolutely sometimes refer to it as ministry. It absolutely is, because I'm in a place where I've been invited, and I'm having a conversation that I know that person is not having with other people. And that to me is a great honor. That's really, I know I'm supposed to be a little more wonky about the law than that, but that's to me the most exciting thing about what
I do. I'm
not sure
that passion is something you ever want to give up. Whitney Scala is with us. He's an attorney here in the San Diego area, talking about his practice and something that you, I made a joke that when you do contracts, it must be boring work unless something goes wrong. But what I hear you saying is that there's a lot more that goes into the decision-making process than just somebody telling you, I want to form a corporation or I want to form a company, and you give them a contract to sign.
You know, one of the biggest challenges with the younger generation, the young people out there, one of the biggest challenges
is
that they're accustomed to retail relationships in so many aspects of their business career and of their personal life. So, for example, when they're looking for an attorney, they want to shop me, which you're entitled to do, but they want to know how much I'm going to charge. They want to know how long it's going to take. And frequently, when I talk about the benefits that I have to bring in terms of maybe a bigger picture package of the tool set of advice, maybe what I have to offer is a long-term relationship, those things don't necessarily resonate. And so the kind of thing you're talking about is a frustration of mine with younger clients.
And I want to hear more about that when we get back. Whitney Scala is with us. He is a real estate business law professional here in Southern California. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Stay with us, folks. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Want a podcast of the show? Of course you do. Go to www.espn1700.com. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And you do that so well. I just know that people hearing your voice are running, not walking, to their computers to download the podcast, which isn't there quite yet, but it will be.
Oh, it's not up yet?
We're done doing the show.
Oh, you mean today's it? Yeah, today. I thought you meant we weren't putting them on.
No, 30 minutes after.
We're not really plugged in.
Nothing's really happening here. It's just the podcast, right?
Everything's just in my mind anyway.
It's a happy place, right, Aaron?
The world's a stage. Whitney, before we went to break, we were talking about your practice and kids these days and a whole bunch of stuff going on. But before we move further, we should probably give out information in case somebody wants to contact you. How should they get a hold of you?
Well, you can find it. You can certainly find me on the internet. First name is Whitney and last name is Scala, S-K-A-L-A. And honest to goodness, I can give you my website. It's scala-apc.com. But if you just Google my name, you'll get there eventually anyway.
It's kind of cool to have a name that lots of other people don't have. I mean, like Bob Ryan. I mean, come on. That's like, Everybody's named Bob Bryan now.
There's actually another Bob Bryan on ESPN.
I know. Isn't that funny? And he's always in trouble.
Always in trouble.
So you probably don't run into a lot of other Whitney Scalas, do you?
I run into one every day.
No way. Just you.
In the mirror?
Yeah.
Whitney Scala Jr.
Ah. Seriously?
Yep. My 30-year-old son.
Wow, and you still talk.
Yeah.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah, he comes over, helps with the crossword puzzle, gets us out of jams.
Is he following your footsteps as an attorney?
No, he's in real estate, as a matter of fact. He works in Point Loma for a small company called the Greenwald Company, and there's only six people in that office, so they're very hands-on when it comes to managing and investing their own money.
So you were talking before we went to the break a little bit about your philosophy of working with clients and helping them. It's more of a spiritual journey for you than it is necessarily a transaction. You don't sound like you do transactions as much as you fill the position of trusted advisor for people, correct?
Right. And it's the transaction that kind of opens up that moment, to be honest. You know, you don't bump into that opportunity to be a trusted advisor when you're just filling in some gaps, when somebody says, hey, our company needs some employment agreements. We've been using kind of a bad version. Can you help us out? That's not the moment where you're going to build a trusted advisor relationship. I do that work. I love that work. And anything else folks need. But it's the transaction that where you know something's going on 9 out of 10 times, and it's going on with the company, and it's frequently going on with the founder or chief officers.
Now, real estate happens to be at the core of so many businesses and so many functions. I know with the internet now, real estate doesn't have to be part of a business model to work. But for most businesses and people, real estate's a part of their lives somewhere along the way, correct?
Right. And, you know, we sort of promoted that as a policy when the SBA grants loans to companies so that they can buy their own premises, and you can put those you can put that real estate and that SBA loan into a separate LLC, for example, and it owned by the same folks who own the business itself. But that model certainly promotes real estate ownership on behalf of companies. And what's really interesting is how many instances for small, medium, and large companies, they start off as the company that they are making something or providing some service, whatever. And after 10 or 20 years, what they really are is a real estate company.
Right.
Why is it important for a company to separate its real estate from the business itself?
Yeah, well, one reason is because you might want to end up selling the business and you want to hang on to the real estate. If you've been a successful business person and you hit age 55, 60, you want to sell your business, you may want to hang on to the real estate and enjoy a $5,000 to $10,000 a month rent check. The other thing is you may want ownership in those two groups to head in different directions. When it comes to your company, you might want your CFO to become a 10% owner. You might want your chief operating officer to become a 10% owner. But when it comes to the real estate itself, that might be something you want to hang on to, just you and your family. And so putting those in two different entities is a great idea. One more reason is if, heaven forbid, something befalls the company and their fortunes head south, you've still got the real estate separately. So if the company has to go into bankruptcy, that's not going to affect your ownership of the real estate.
And oftentimes it bails people out. I mean, a friend of mine owned a couple of Ace Hardwares down in South Bay. Home Depot came in. No market for Ace Hardware where he was anymore, but he owned the real estate.
It's amazing.
That he did okay after all.
So
right?
It can almost act as a hedge sometimes if the other parts of your business aren't doing so well.
There's plenty of law firms who were in Little Italy, and then they crept up to Bankers Hill and the Hillcrest area, and they own their real estate, and voila, there you are, you know, waking up 10, 20 years later, a few of our historic runs around here that we have in real estate. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, yes, something you bought for maybe $500,000 is worth $1.2 million. There's your 401k.
Now, without getting too far off track, because I know we have a lot to talk about, but what's happening to the Chargers in the stadium?
Yeah.
I mean, are you following that real estate? Because that's a big real estate transaction, right?
All right. Well, there's
a big one.
You know, it's definitely an Olympic sport to cover, to follow every nuance of what's going on in Mission Valley. But I just have this thought, and that thought is that, you know, we're asking taxpayers to become real estate investors there, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's really what's going on. And in terms of a football stadium, which if you remember, every diagram you've ever seen of that site, it always has room for an NFL-sized football stadium. All right, so if you're a real estate investor and you're being asked, hey, are you in on a football stadium? The question really is, well, how do you feel about that market in 15 years? Let's just use that as a, I mean, because we know a stadium lasts 20, 30 years. So I'm looking for kind of a midpoint there where the stadium's still plenty usable. You're not going to knock it down yet. You haven't really amortized that expense. Is that where you want to be? A 60 to 70 seat stadium. And, you know, I question that a little bit.
Are you thinking because we might not have a football team
at that time? I'm thinking that even if we did, is NFL football going to be as popular and to be able to support the model that the 60 to 70,000 seat stadium implies, right? You don't have to have a sport that's run out of business. You just have to have a sport or anything. You know, NASCAR is suffering a little bit. You just have to have something that's about 10 to 20% off from its
peak. And
that's
a huge difference.
It's a huge difference. If you're counting on skyboxes, for example, and you have 20 skyboxes, and in normal times, you maybe have three or four that are empty anyway, so you've got 16 filled, and you drop that by 20%, well, now you dip down to 13. And I'll bet you that puts a serious crimp in that model. And remember, with something like football, there's so little that's scalable. You can't field a 30-person football team. You've got to field a 45-person football team with another 15 guys over here and another bunch of coaches running around.
And there's only so many hot dogs 60,000 people are going to buy, only so many parking
spots.
Right. So you can't scale it up to tens of millions.
The NFL's certainly trying.
Yeah.
You know, and every sport's trying. But I'm just cautioning. And so
hold that thought. We're going to get back to football and the future of San Diego in Whitney's hands. What do you think? Whitney Scully.
If Leah let us, then we'll talk about that.
She's in charge, the boss.
Awesome.
Leah. You're listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. You're listening to us on ESPN, 1700 AM. But did you know you can watch us too? Visit us on our Facebook page, Biz Talk Radio. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan, and we're coming to you from the ESET Studios. Glad to have you with us today. If you missed the first part of the show, you missed Leah.
You'll have to go back and listen to our podcast.
Yeah, you'll have to listen to the podcast because she's amazing. Although she hasn't done the jingle yet, she will. Right?
I told you, it's in the process. I'm mapping it out.
Okay.
It's going to be ready soon.
All right. So we're counting on the jingle coming up. We have no idea what we're going to use it for, but we're going to have a jingle on this show. Whitney Scala is with us, and thank you for being here, Whitney.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bob.
Yeah. Kind of nice to work with you.
Enjoying the afternoon.
Yeah, I know. It gives a little lightheartedness to the talk of the real estate in San Diego. You were talking about the stadium and what it might look like in 15 years, depending upon what happens with the pro team that we have in,
right,
if we even have one at that point in time, right?
So I'm talking about it from the standpoint of a real estate person, you know, where I'm thinking about useful life of the facility. I'm thinking about the probable market out there in 15 years. And so I'm just questioning whether an enormous stadium is a wise place for a long-term investment. I like the smaller stadium, and I think that the smaller stadium has more diverse uses. I think it's a fabulous venue for even for football. I think San Diego State would love this, would find a lot of success in a smaller venue, and we'll all get a chance, those of us who aren't too grumpy, to see how that works out this fall when we go up to Carson. Up to Carson and check out the StubHub Center where the Galaxy plays soccer. About a 20,000 seat stadium, but that's where the Chargers are going to play this fall.
So you are talking about an MLS stadium then potentially? I know there's been talk of it here in San Diego.
Yeah, well, a lot of the plans show an MLS sized stadium, which could also accommodate
MLS
football.
MLS means
Major League Soccer.
Major League Soccer
yeah.
size. Okay.
I mean,
this is a sports stadium. Right?
I wrote an article about 6 or 7 years ago, and it appeared in the Cutting Edge Peninsula Beacon.
Woo.
But I did say, that was back when we were talking about the Chargers maybe moving up to Escondido. And I said, if that's going to happen, let's build a small stadium down in East Village. And that indeed is where we ended up talking about. And what was the biggest complaint? It was a complaint about the massive size of an NFL-sized stadium. I wondered out loud in my article whether maybe a smaller soccer stadium like you see all over Europe and like you now see MLS building all over America, 20 to 30 to 35,000 seats. I said, maybe San Diego State could play there. Maybe an MLS team could play there. And maybe we could get a Mexican League soccer team there. You know, we have U.S. teams that go down south of the border and play.
I think a lot of purists just covered their ears and they're screaming.
No,
the NFL plays games over in Europe now too. They play in London.
Why can't the Mexican League have
a
franchise?
What happens to having a big name football team in San Diego?
No, I'm not. Remember, the context of that article was when the Chargers were talking about going to Escondido.
So they were going to be taken care of.
I wasn't running them out of town. So they were going to be taken care of. The MLS season runs basically a different time of year as the Mexican League season, if I understand right. And so you'd probably end up having 50 or 60 dates.
So do you have a deal in the works that you haven't told anybody about? Because this sounds like a pre-announcement to something cool.
Well, I think what we're doing is we're taking that concept de facto, and we're going to see it explored with the Mission Valley site.
Whether
MLS comes on board, whether we really finish up that
are
way,
the proposals
whatever.
Made public? Have you seen them? Can people look at what's being proposed? And are you involved in any of them, or you're just
I'm not involved. I'm just I'm interested and opinionated.
Yep. So downtown San Diego's downtown is probably one of the better downtowns in the United States. As I travel around the United States, you don't see too many as cool as downtown.
You know what? There's a lot of fabulous things to say about our downtown, and I noticed you keep introducing us as the ESET.
ESET Studios, yes.
Yeah. And so I think they're located downtown.
They are.
Their name's on a building, and I applaud that. I think we're losing a lot of service industries out of downtown. That's been a traditional downtown tenant. So I worry about not just the downtown office space being full, but I worry about the downtown culture and whether it's the kind of culture that's going to support other traditional downtown institutions like our symphony and our opera and other theater. A lot of the newer tenants are at a different place in their career path and maybe at a different place in their marketing ideas. And so the notion of giving $10,000 so your company's name can be on the symphony, maybe that doesn't work for their company. Maybe that doesn't work for them personally. And that's the kind of vacuum I'm worried about creating.
Do you think it's a technology thing or an age thing or both?
Well, I think it's more of a company structure thing where, you know, I'm in law. We market and network typically by joining the boards of institutions. You know, where you go to a hospital or a library or whatever, there's always a couple attorneys. There's always a couple accountants. There's always a couple other professional firms on there. And that's how we market traditionally. But if you're a tech person, maybe you're marketing on the internet. Maybe you're marketing to a different audience.
It
may not be local. And so we were talking earlier, for example, about we were going to talk about restaurants somehow. Oh, how do people choose the best restaurant?
Yelp.
I was going to say how I choose the restaurant I want to go to. Who hires the most high school kids? Who sponsors the most youth soccer teams? That's what I want to know. I want to know about their commitment to the fabric of the community. I'm not saying that's better or worse. I'm saying it's different and has its own importance. And it's easy to overlook the erosion of that to the establishment of something different.
You know, being a real estate attorney gives you a lot of insight. Seriously. I mean, you're talking about things that, like, city fathers would talk about, but you're naturally a part of that because of your involvement in the real estate community.
That is another really cool thing about my career. I have a front row seat on so much interesting stuff. And because I have to market, I have to get clients, and it's a personal decision, right? For what I do and at the level I do it, it's not really an internet presence. There's no SEO that's really going to help me. I need to be out there. So it drives me to get out there, and I'm so fortunate it does, because I have to go to stuff and get smart about it. I have to meet people and get smart about who they are, and the result turns out to be fabulous.
What's the best part of real estate in Southern California right now? We're running out of time. We're coming to the end. What do you think is the coolest thing people ought to be looking at in real estate in Southern California right now? From any perspective.
Well, if you're an investor, I would always keep it boring. I'd get
three bedroom, two bath, single family residences.
I'd get a warehouse that someone like Amazon wants to use as a fulfillment center.
Warehouse.
That's the kind of stuff I would do.
That doesn't sound boring. That sounds exciting, but maybe we could make it boring. I don't know. Whitney Scala, thank you so much. Whitney Scala is the name to talk to if you have anything in real estate you need help with. You're listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
And you can also talk to Whitney about all your other business needs too, right?
And your personal stuff.
And your personal stuff.
Yeah, just
He's
give
a,
me a
therapist
call.
Here too as yeah. well. Don't go anywhere, folks. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'd like to take a moment and thank our engineer, Jeff Bilodeau, music by Derek Audette, our interns, Sarah, Andrew, Leah, Deidre, and Chrissy, and our director of marketing, Katie Jansen. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. I thought somebody else was going to say something. Wait. Before we move on, our voice of reason sister is listening in.
Oh,
Yes. So we have... Our voice of reason is going to pop out of the woodwork.
Hi, Lori.
And say hello. That's Ken Huebner. He doesn't talk much. I don't know why. He just likes to sit in the background and say something once in a while. But he's here.
It's because you don't stop talking long enough.
Yeah, that would be a good point. Yeah.
Also, it guarantees the few things that he does say seem really important, whether or not they actually are.
Well, I know.
That was a compliment, though.
So, your sister's listening, right? Did you say hello? I missed what you said. You said hello. Okay. Glad to have you all listening and watching on Facebook Live. Hello, if you're there. If you're not, then you didn't know I said hello. Wow, that was... Okay, we got to move on. I could do better than that. I got to do better than that. Speaking of doing better than that, Eric Oxenberg's with us. Eric, thanks.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
Good afternoon.
Good.
We had to move on because my jokes were just going absolutely nowhere.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, the crickets were playing in the background, and so we're going to move on. Hopefully, we'll do a better job. Eric, you are a marketing strategist, designer, and coincident ideas. I like that name.
Thank you. I came up with it, late night session. I'm sure I could have done better had I had another drink or two, but
it actually turned out ideas. Really. There you go.
You probably wouldn't remember it, though, if you had another drink.
It's really true. It's true.
Tell us a little bit about what you do and your marketing strategy and design.
Okay. One of the things I often say when I talk to people is I say, if you've got a website and you think it's kind of old and it's kind of tired.
It is.
Maybe it sucks. It probably does.
It does.
And that's when I ask people to give me a call.
Yeah, well, everybody that goes to our website knows I designed it in the middle of the night, so maybe you need to look at it.
With fresh eyes and in the morning.
Yeah, in the morning, because, wow, we need help.
Websites are pretty important these days. Do you still run into people?
Wait, did you just say that?
Well, no. Do you still run into people who are like, hey, I don't even have a website, and your jaw just kind of drops if they're running a business?
You know, to be honest with you, there aren't very many people that don't have websites. Because it is really one of the most common ways that people communicate today.
And you can do them free now for nothing.
You can, but
not very well, though.
You tend to regret it.
Yeah.
I agree that there's a lot of poor stuff out there. And there are a lot of people that have websites in the business community that aren't really expressing themselves the way they could be. And that's why it's good to have people, you know, like myself.
Well, I did keep all my clothes on ours.
You mean on the site itself?
Yeah.
Did you design it with your clothes on?
I didn't express myself the way I could have because I kept my clothes on. All right. I'm giving up. I'm not even going
to. I thought that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Thank you.
There we go.
There's the crickets.
Plus one.
It's almost a sense of relief when I hear the crickets. Now I can move on. Okay. Wow. People and their websites. Most of them that you look at, let me guess. Do you, when you look at them, get a feeling or a sense of, wow, these are pretty good websites, or are there tears in your eyes? Do you feel pain when you look at most websites? What's the gamut of emotions when you experience other people's websites?
That's a good question.
That's the funny why I thing ask is, it, because it's a good question.
It's a good question, Bob. And the fact is that it falls into two categories. For the most part, there's stuff that really doesn't communicate well, and there's stuff that's really awesome. I like the stuff that's awesome, and I try and say to people that don't do that well, find the stuff that you really like and try and bring that into your website, because anybody can improve what they've got and take style that other people have and take, you know, ideas that other people have and bring their own stuff up. And it's not that hard to do. It's not really that tough to build a nice website.
Really?
It really
is. Because I start off with the idea that I want a clean, well-orchestrated, easy-to-use website, and then I junk it up with all the fun graphics.
But what happens?
I don't know.
His brain takes over.
It just, it's like I want that graphic, and then I want that graphic, and pretty soon it's all graphics, and it's no good anymore, and it's like a mess.
And that's probably the number one mistake people make.
Yeah, we try too hard, right?
I think you're really trying to do too much, and it's not necessary. Clean and minimal and functional is what people are trying to do.
I never have really been a minimalist on anything, though, so it's hard on a website, but we're working on it.
You can.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of restraint sometimes.
Yeah. Well.
But it's also a matter of being honest to who you are. What I want people to do when they're working on any of their marketing is to project their personality. Because if you, Bob, you have a personality and it's right out front and you want people to know who you are, and if your website doesn't have a picture of you and it doesn't express you in a particular way, if you don't talk about yourself in the first person saying, I'm Bob, and this is my, you know, this is my show, and this is what I'm trying to project, then people aren't really going to get it, and they're not going to trust you. If they don't trust you, they're not going to call you. And if they don't call you, you don't get any business.
Well, you're deep about this website stuff.
It's,
I mean, you think it through, right?
It all comes down to what are you trying to accomplish? And I want people to get the most out of it that they possibly can.
Okay, when websites first came out, I remember years and years ago, somebody would pay like $100,000 to get what we call a landing page these days, right?
That's right.
I mean, it was like a big deal to even have a website.
It was graphic.
It was.
Before it was just text.
Yeah.
And now it's much different.
Right. And we all thought if we put a website up, the world would... Oh. Beat a path to our
instant
door, right?
Money.
Instant money.
Didn't happen.
And for some people, it kind of did, but those were like the minuscule amount of people, right? Were they?
Sure. I mean, there were the social sites. One of the first ones was GeoCities.
GeoCities.
It was the...
There's a little one called Facebook that did something, right?
Facebook is basically what grew out of these other social sites.
Wow.
And Facebook was the one that really took off.
So when you look at websites and you're looking at the design that somebody put forth, do you pigeonhole them as like, okay, this is a product idea website, or this is a corporate identity website and they're just trying to get their name out in front of people, or this is a call to action website, this is trying to get people to do something like place an order? Are there different categories of what websites are for?
Yeah, absolutely. I see it instantly. I know if somebody is corporate and they're trying to just brand themselves, hey, Toyota's got a website. They're not particularly selling cars. They're selling the experience of driving. And
you've had some experience with Toyota, haven't you?
In point of fact, I worked on Toyota stuff for an ad agency in Southern California. So, yeah. But what I learned from that experience is it's not just, I got to sell you. It's, I got to make you feel like this is a great experience, and that's why you want to buy it.
So you know all that secret stuff behind the website to get people to do things you want them to do. You know how to do that. I can tell.
Part of my background, I think, came from doing direct mail and direct marketing, where you actually had to sell something at the end of the day.
So you have an ability to help people develop their websites into something useful, not just something that takes up their time.
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to find out how you do that when we get back. Eric Oxenberg is here, marketing strategist, designer. Coincident Ideas is his company. CoincidentIdeas.com is the website, right?
Absolutely.
Hopefully it's a good one.
It is a fabulous
website. It's a fabulous website. You're listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't you go anywhere. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Be sure and get a podcast of today's show and our previous shows, too. www.espn1700.com. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And you do that so well for Facebook, too. Look at that. You got the Facebook
angle
in there.
I'm looking for my
camera. Yeah. And if you're one of the three people watching us on Facebook Live.
Yeah, hi, Mom.
Yeah. Actually, what's really cool about that, though, is nobody watches it really live, but 10,000 people look at it afterwards. Who knew?
But if they ever are interested and you submit a question, we might
just
ask it.
That's
we have yet to have a question submitted, but we would consider asking it as long as if it didn't make us
Plus, you can get to see Leah. Turn it around so they can see you. Turn around. There we go. Look at that. There's Leah. It's going to call. We're going to call this the Leah Show pretty soon.
That's it. Yep. You're taking over.
Eric Oxenberg is with us, marketing strategist. Wow. Say that fast five times. Marketing strategist, designer. Coincident Ideas is his company. Coincident Ideas is the website as well. And you have a really cool website.
Thank you.
You told me.
But it's true.
Is it?
It is true. I went and checked it out.
And you said at the end you had something to give away, but what is that?
I got goodies for listeners.
You do not.
In point
goodies
of fact,
for our listeners.
I don't feel that anybody should go away from a show empty-handed. So what I have is a downloaded package of PDFs, files that you can look at, and it will give you an idea of how to improve your website by thinking about what your market is. I've got a tip sheet with at least 15 different ideas on how to market yourself that aren't even online. And I've got a third one that, frankly, I can't remember what it is.
Well, that's good. You got so much you can't remember. So here's what's interesting to me about this. I read a statistic about millennials and that like some gazillion percentage of them have a nighttime job. Like they do. Everybody does something else,
that's
right?
That's a large percentage.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's called the gig economy, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's got something they're doing outside of their main job.
Right. And it's Uber or Lyft or they've got a website or they've got something else they're doing, delivering pizzas. Uber's doing pizzas now, right?
I don't know. I think they do have a food delivery.
The food delivery? Yeah.
Uber has fed me many a time.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes.
So my point is that everybody's got an idea. Everybody wants to do something and everybody needs a website.
That's
and
true.
You're the guy that can help them with this.
Absolutely. From a small site to something that's mega corporation.
So what is your market range? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there going, geez, I wish I knew this guy. Because do you get invited over for dinner a lot? Because I'm imagining people would invite you over for dinner just to have them look at your website.
I built a website for a guy after he invited me over for dinner. And he's a chef. He got away with it.
Seriously.
Yes, and it was awesome.
He fed you and he got his website.
Yes, he did. Well, granted, I charged him a few dollars extra.
Oh.
But yeah, and it's...
I was going for the meal. I'm out for the meal. And
that's the funny thing. You know, I actually, most of the time when I talk to somebody about building a website, we meet over lunch or dinner or something. And I spend like an hour, hour and a half talking to them about their business and their personality and who they are. And at that point, I actually know what these guys are.
Really?
What these women are. And then I can figure out what do they need and I can give them a proposal to give it to them.
So can you take... most companies that have a presence on the internet and actually make it productive for? I mean, is that something that you know you can do, or is it something you know you can take a shot at?
In most cases, if they have something up there and they've got a business model that works, I like to work with companies that exist.
That's a good point.
I like to work with companies that already have some track record so that they're doing things and they're successful enough. First, because then they can, you know, afford to actually upgrade their website. But if they're not actually doing that well, then maybe they don't know how to present themselves. And even then, I can give them more focus.
What's the small kind of company you would work with? Like a one-person consulting or maybe a CPA professional type firm? Do you work with somebody that small or do you just work for the like companies with 100 employees and up?
Most of the companies that I work with have one or two people. Sometimes they have 5 or 10 people. They're small to medium-sized businesses. They are typically making, you know, anywhere from $100,000 to $500,000 in annual gross. It runs a really big range, and I can work with a small company. I mean, I can make a dog walking service, the number one dog walking service in your area. But I can also
makes me want to go out and start up a dog walking service just so I could be number one.
It would be fun.
It would be fun.
Do you have any statistics as far as if, say, it was a local coffee shop that wanted to hire you?
Yeah.
You could say, we can drive X amount more traffic based on the demographics of your area to your coffee shop if you have a site versus not, or if you have a great site versus what you currently have?
To be fair, that isn't the kind of thing that you can ever really promise someone. It's like when you go and you say, I need somebody for SEO for my site, SEO being search engine optimization. Mm-hmm. And people say, I will get you on page one of Google. And you go, how can you be so sure of that? Because it's really next to impossible to know for sure that you can do that. What I can do is I can raise the level of somebody's online presence to the extent that they can get people to see them, those people will be qualified as prospects because they will be sold on what you do in the website.
Sure.
And that extends to email marketing or social media, all these other things. They all tie together. You know, if you don't have a website that's strong, what's the point of sending them an email?
Is the website kind of the focal point of all electronic marketing these days? Is that kind of where everything begins and ends, is with your business website, or are there other portals that are more meaningful today than your website?
You know, the way I look at it is you have a bunch of ways to get people's attention. In most cases, the thing you do to close the sale and to get them to actually go, I want to call this guy, or I want to email this guy, or I want to buy from this guy, the website is the last stop. That's the destination. You send somebody out an email and you say, do you want more information? Go here. And they click and they go to the website. The website should go, bam, I'm closed.
So they
I
can
believe
use
it.
Social media to drive traffic to their website.
Absolutely.
Everything comes back to that central space.
The website really is important as the final arbiter of, are you worth somebody's time? And yeah, if you have a Facebook page and you're posting things on Facebook, you might see a really cool article. I work with a fitness guy in Los Angeles, and his website, he posts stuff in his blog. And he will do little excerpts of that blog, and he puts them on Facebook every day. And then he may boost those Facebook posts so that a lot of people see them. But the fact is, at the end of the day, they're going to go to his Facebook page, click on that link, go to his website, and then they're going to noodle around on his website, and that goes, I'm closed. I buy it. I want to talk to this guy. That's why the website's super important. Absolutely.
Is there a huge difference in the website that actually moves product, like an Amazon website where you don't talk to humans most of the time, you just order it and it shows up at your door, versus a website for, let's say, a brick and mortar place, which is trying to drive business into the store?
I think so.
Is that a massive difference in the way they do things?
Well, Amazon is its own beast.
Yeah, kind of.
And
now, isn't it?
I've actually been talking to people who are Amazon specialists, trying to get some information that they know and give them a little bit of the general marketing stuff that I know. And yeah, it's totally different. You have to actually really specialize to be an Amazon seller. And it's nothing
so
like
Amazon
doing retail.
Is its own world then, almost right now.
It really
like
is.
Kind of like eBay is its own world.
It really is.
A few others are their own.
Yeah.
But taking out these big ones like this, wow, time goes way too fast. Eric Oxenberg is here, marketing strategist, designer, Coincident Ideas is his company. He has a special bag of goodies for those of you who are interested. Go to your website, right? Mm-hmm. CoincidentIdeas.com.
I'll give you the URL, but stick around. We'll give you the link to it at the end of the segment.
You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't you go anywhere. We'll be back for our last segment in the best information yet.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Tomorrow, our in-studio guest is Caleb DeSound with Lord Abbott and Jimi Hendrix. Not that Jimi Hendrix.
From the dead.
with Lightpost Digital.
Did you get it?
So be sure and tune in tomorrow. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. We're glad to have you with us today. Good show tomorrow coming up, I believe, right?
Absolutely.
Jimi Hendrix? Ooh.
Jimi Hendrix
yeah.
is back.
I'm very excited for this Lightpost Digital, but I'm a diehard Jimi Hendrix fan, and that would just make my life.
He played football for the Raiders, right?
Jimi Hendrix has a museum in Seattle, and I joined even though I live nowhere near there.
Seriously?
Yes, because it was so worth it.
I've heard.
yeah. Oh,
he has a museum that you joined a museum.
I did. A music
Have you even
museum.
Been there yet?
No, I've never been there.
But you joined the museum.
I want to go someday.
Wow.
It's on your bucket list.
It is.
That's yeah. Eric Oxenberg, marketing strategist, designer. Coincident Ideas, if you go to the website, you have a bag of goodies for people to give away, right?
I have indeed.
And you're holding back on the URL, right?
Oh, it's such a toughie.
What is it?
If you go to www.tinyurl.com/CIHowToMarket, then you will get my little goodie bag of tips and tricks. And
Tiny Earl is tiny URL, right?
Tiny URL.
Tinyurl.com. Mm-hmm. And what's the forward slash?
It's /CI how to market.
CI is in the letter C and the letter I. CI mm-hmm. is in confident informer.
Coincident ideas, my lad.
I like confidential informer.
Coincident ideas.
I tried to make it just how to market, but they said, oh, that's taken.
Oh, okay. Just how to market?
Hey, you know, the challenge of getting a name on the internet is like, oh my God, impossible.
I don't know what to say. It is, you're right. So we're talking about making websites better. Mm-hmm. And did we talk about the off-air, the Italian restaurant? Was that off-air?
That was off-air.
That was off-air. You've got to say that again.
Okay.
So somebody challenged you to find a website that was in school, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really not all that great.
Some years ago, my instructor said, find a website that's appalling, really unbelievably bad. And I did. And it was an Italian restaurant in downtown New York City. And I'm sure the food was awesome, but you couldn't find their menu, and it was done in primary colors, and the text was written by somebody's mother-in-law. And I said, well, fine, I can do better than that. And I built a really nice, really cool, really modern website, and I was so close to calling them.
And you didn't call them.
I didn't do
what?
It. I should have.
You should have.
I could have given it to them.
You could have.
And I probably should have.
Is it too late?
It's...
I'm feeling bad for this restaurant in New York.
You could have made it an anonymous thing.
I mean,
I know. A donation. But I didn't do it.
Okay, you got to look them up now because my heart's just hurting for them. I mean, they need your website, right?
Yes. Well, they may have done better by now. I don't know.
This was how many years ago?
I don't know. 6 years ago, maybe?
Yep. So if somebody's listening and they download your bag of goodies and they get really brilliant about doing websites, do they still need you?
Well... maybe not, but
I wasn't expecting that one. So you can get them good enough just on your bag of goodies that they don't need you?
I can get them
good
enough to think about what they want to do and
then
actually,
they'll need you.
You know, a little knowledge is enough to get you on the path.
It I'm trying helps to help you out here.
You may need an expert to actually produce what you have in your head.
Yes, just say people need you.
But do you ever sit down with somebody who's, when they're telling you what they want, and you say, you know what, you're better off doing this on your own?
Versus... seriously? No.
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 So it's always going to be, I
so there is a need for you that people need to contact you.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
Yes, of course.
You're a humble guy.
And I am. But I want to help people out. And my thing nowadays is, if you've got something that I can help you do better, then darn it, I'm going to help you do it better. And it doesn't matter... I will give you a list of a bunch of things you can do, and you can use me for one of them, or 10 of them, or all of them. But I don't care. As long as you do this stuff, you will be more successful. And part of it is doing the websites. I think what I bring to building a website is I've got an eye for the design of it, and I've got the big ad agency background, so it looks really beautiful.
Did you do the Mad Men thing?
Did I do the Mad Men thing?
Yeah.
No, but you know... my dad did.
Your dad was a madman.
Yes. Do you remember the show Mad Men?
Yeah, the you know, 60s ad
yeah,
agencies
absolutely.
In New York City, right?
There was an ad exec, the guy who owned the agency, his name was Don Draper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was my father.
No way.
He drove a Lincoln Continental every year. He smoked cigarettes like nobody's business. He actually did go on 3 martini lunches.
That was the good old days, right?
I didn't watch. He got divorced.
Yeah.
Well, so obviously it was... Mad Men.
It was Mad Men all over again.
But if not for him, I probably wouldn't have gone into the advertising business, and I wouldn't have learned the stuff that I learned. And it helped a lot. Honestly, it gave me an idea of why things are important in terms of your brand, and why things are important in terms of your image, and why you have to present, to a certain extent, an idealized version of yourself, but mostly why you have to tell stories in order to be successful.
Stories. I love stories. Mm-hmm. Stories are good things.
Absolutely.
They really are. They're great things. So when you sit down with a potential client and you're talking to them about helping them with their website, mm-hmm. is the biggest sticking point price, or is it just getting them to understand what you can do? Why doesn't everybody just move forward with a better website?
In a lot of cases, I don't think they're quite ready to put in the work of figuring out what they want to say.
Mm.
And that's the biggest sticking point, is you really have to know what you want to talk about. And part of what my job is, I interview people. I mentioned that in the earlier segment. I actually do spend an hour or two talking to people and figure out what they're trying to accomplish. And then I say, well, this is a really great way to get that accomplished, and it'll look good too. And that's my hook.
You ever sit down with somebody and they give you the idea of what they're doing on the website and you go, that's not going to work?
Yes, that does happen occasionally.
Do you ever tell them?
I say,
you're too nice
look,
a guy, aren't you? I can tell you don't say that.
I will
you
say...
You probably have look, a nice way of saying it.
I tell them, hey, this is how you can do it better.
Ah.
And that always works, because people want to hear, oh, my idea is good, but I can do something better. And I,
you mean
I'm
like
still,
switch it out with a different product?
Can you please like form a different company, please? But no, I don't do that.
Can you go back to school and become an attorney? Because you're a really bad doctor.
There's a certain amount of upkeep that goes into having a website. Is that something you're also involved with? Or do you basically hand that off to them and say, hey, this is how you do it?
Most people want to. And then I say, you know, maintenance is a really good thing. And yes, what I will do is I will say, you know, here's your website. We just turned the key. It's running. Car's purring perfectly. You're driving down the highway. But sooner or later, you're going to get a flat tire. And you're going to have to call me. And you might be better off just having me take a look under the engine, under
buying
the hood.
Buying extended warranty up front.
Yeah. Well, it's not necessarily an extended warranty, but it's like you got to go to your mechanic every 6 months and make sure that everything's cool.
But if they put you on retainer, then they can just have it already fixed.
Mm-hmm. But and if that allows them to get more content, too. They put up new stuff.
Yeah. But if
that's
just,
really good.
So if it's just updating the soup of the day, you're not really going to need to be involved.
Nowadays,
but, no.
You really don't.
I hope
the back
not,
end stuff? Hey, I'm taking care of their server so that they have all their files up to date, and I make sure that everything is secure as it ought to be.
Do you ever check on old websites that you've done to make sure that they're running well?
If they don't want me to, then, you know, if I keep in touch with them, yeah. And to be honest, most of my clients wind up being people that I know fairly well, and a lot of them become my friends.
What's the coolest website you've ever done? We only have 1 minute left, so you have to think fast.
Oh, my God.
What?
You know, I did a website for a girl who was in a band, and it was a rock and roll website. And I did heavy Photoshop work, doing filter work on concert shots that I took, and it really looked cool. I took some of the content from her agency that did the PR, but I made it look really
neat. So you're good at Photoshop?
Yeah, actually,
can you Photoshop my gut out so that my stomach doesn't show up in any pictures anymore?
I could probably make you look like...
That's a good place to
thank you. You're hired. Eric Oxenberg, your website again.
My website is coincidentideas.com. If you want my goodie bag, you will go to www.tinyearl.com/CI-how-to-market.
Eric Oxenberg, thank you so much. You've been listening to BizTalk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Have a great and prosperous day. Bye-bye, folks.